What is going on with Brexit?
I think if I had to go for one word, it would be deadlock.
This is the Marketplace Morning Report, live from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. You'd be forgiven if you've lost the plot on Brexit, but it's important today because the EU's 27 members have nominally agreed to move on with negotiations, even though they say not enough progress has been made. The BBC's political correspondent Chris Mason explains what the sticking points are.
There are three things that the UK has to try and persuade the EU that it's made sufficient progress on in these negotiations. The first is money. It's a massive sticking point. At the moment, Europe wants to see more money from the UK. There's then the issue of citizens' rights. So that's Brits who are living elsewhere in Europe or European citizens living in Britain. What happens to them? And the final one is the border between the UK and the European Union. You might think of the UK as an island nation, but there's a land border. And that's the border that separates Northern Ireland, part of the UK, and the Republic of Ireland, which is an independent state.
Now, Chris, businesses want to know what's going on. For example, Lloyd Blankfein of Goldman Sachs tweeted on Thursday he expects to be spending more time in Frankfurt than in London.
Yeah, it was as if the boss of Goldman Sachs was trolling the British Prime Minister Theresa May because she had just arrived in Brussels for the European summit. The boss of the EU's negotiation team, a guy called Michel Barnier, loves to talk about the clock ticking. He loves the sound of a noisy timepiece to symbolise the nature of these discussions. And the time frame is tight because the UK is due to leave the European Union at the end of March 2019. But in order for any deal to be signed off, the negotiation pretty much has to be done by around about this time next year.
Chris Mason, let's do the numbers. As European averages move higher, a glimmer of Brexit optimism is leading London's FTSE 100 up 17 points, or 0.23%. China's Hang Seng surged over 300 points, closing up 1.17% as the Communist Party Congress continues.
Well, then you better tell me again, because I just might forget.
We love football, meat pies, kangaroos and Holland cows.
One of those things is on its way out in Australia. The doors are about to close on Holden Cars, General Motors' outpost down under. Its production line falls silent, spelling the end of all car manufacturing in Australia. Here's the BBC's Howell Griffiths in Sydney.
In an emotional ceremony, the final red Holden V8 Commodore came off the line, the last car, for now at least, to be made in Australia. The first was back in 1948 when Holden kick-started the domestic motor industry. It went on to dominate until eventually import tariffs were reduced and government subsidies were cut. The company's American owner, General Motors, says the Holden brand will remain, but using imported cars. The majority of the workers have found new jobs, but the chances of any company deciding to resume car production in Australia seem slim. In Sydney, I'm the BBC's Howell Griffith for Marketplace.
Now, to really tackle migration, you got to understand what drives people to leave their homes. And we're going to take you now to the Back Way, a route of more than 6,000 Gambians have taken this year from West Africa across the Sahara Desert to Libya, where they tried to cross to Italy on boats. The BBC's Marie Keyworth reports.
It's a very remote area. It's an area for farmers, local farmers.
Heading east down a long straight road, Bakary Jame explains the problems his home region, the North Bank, is facing.
There is no industries, no factories.
Bakary is vice chairman of a charity called the Morgan Clark Foundation, which has been trying to bring development to the North Bank region for a number of years.
As you can see, you cannot find anybody working in the fields because where are the youths? That's the big question mark.
The reason why there are so few young people around is because a huge proportion of them, mainly the young men, have left. They've taken what's called the back way, the overland route to Europe via Libya and the Mediterranean Sea.
See, all the farmlands are deserted. Nobody.
After 2 hours driving, we get to our destination, Jajari village. Our first stop is to greet the elders. Gathered in a circle, they offer a prayer and pour coffee. Talking through a translator, they describe their situation.
Now in our village, about 60% of the young people here all went to Bagui. Some of them died. There is no work, This is the reason why most of them go to Bagni.
For all the men who've gone, there are mothers, sisters and wives left behind. Fatou Dabor is struggling to come to terms with the fact that her son seems to have disappeared without a trace.
We haven't heard from him in a year. He is not calling. We don't know his whereabouts. We as women, we hardly sleep at night. We feel our young man's absence.
There is some hope for the village. A series of projects paid for by the Morgan Clark Foundation has brought what little development there is to see. It's paid for the building of the school and has built a residential lodge, which they hope one day will house tourists. In the Gambia, I'm the BBC's Marie Keyworth for Marketplace.
Finally, Zurich-based Responsibility Investments is putting some $3 billion into the world's remotest markets, including Bhutan for hazelnut production. I bet that boosts Bhutan's famous happiness index. Happy Friday from us. I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.